Survivors in Palu, Indonesia, are growing more desperate in the aftermath of a massive earthquake and tsunami. Last Friday, a 7.5 magnitude earthquake struck just off the coast of the island of Sulawesi, setting off a tsunami that devoured the city of Palu. As of Wednesday morning, more than 1,400 people have been confirmed dead. Reports say that police are guarding shops against those desperate for food and resources. Joining us to talk about the situation on the ground is Rebecca Henschke, Indonesia editor for the BBC, who is in Palu.
The city still has no power, so that is of major concern. Most people here get their clean drinking water through pumps into underground water supplies. So with the power out, it means people have very little access to clean drinking water. A lot of the rivers around here have been polluted with mud, as there were major mudslides triggered by the earthquake. So people are desperate for that. There's also a shortage in the city now of petrol, which means people having difficulty getting around, getting out of the city to somewhere else, and also with tampering search and rescue efforts. Also, food is in short supply as well.
Has the Indonesian government been able to coordinate what they need in order to help the survivors on the island of Sulawesi?
Well, President Joko Widodo has visited the area today, and he's promising to speed up the aid operation here. People are very frustrated about the slow pace of aid. The Indonesian military was deployed early, and today the only airport in Palu has reopened. The runway was badly damaged in the quake. But the opening up today of that airport means that there have been cargo planes that have been able to land, carrying that much-needed fresh water, food and fuel. But there's lots of areas outside of Palu, in Donggala and beyond, that no aid has reached. Today at Palu Airport, I met one lady who had walked with her family of four young children for 10 hours through the mountains from one of these remote villages. She said after days waiting for help to arrive, she knew she needed to do something, and that's why they made that long journey on foot to get some kind of help. And she gulped down some water and some bread at the airport, the first drink that they'd had for a couple of days.
Is there enough international aid arriving right now?
Well, that has also been slow, given the problems accessing this area. And President Joko Widodo said today that it could be a matter of weeks before the power supply is restored to these areas.
Now, there are also Indonesians outside of the country, here in the United States and abroad, who are probably wondering how, if any, way they can help recovery efforts on the ground. Have you been able to assess the best way to do that so far?
Well, people have been sending aid in the form of food and clothes in huge measures, and that's been sitting in warehouses in Jakarta. A lot of that is difficult to get into this area. I would suggest finding out which groups they think are going to operate here effectively and sending cash that then can be accessed by aid workers on the ground here and used to buy resources here or in towns outside of Palu.
Rebecca Henschke is on the ground in Palu, Indonesia for the BBC. Rebecca, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
We now turn to an aid organization to see how they are coordinating their assistance efforts to Indonesia from the United States. Kate Deschino is vice president of emergency programs for AmeriCares, a humanitarian organization that provides health resources to disaster zones. Kate, thanks for joining The Takeaway.
Thank you, Tanzina.
So where are you and the organization in the process right now in sending whatever needs to be sent to Indonesia?
AmeriCares response teams are on the ground in Palu, and what they're seeing are incredibly difficult situations. They're seeing people who have just lost everything, their loved ones, their homes, They're operating without electricity, communications, and limited gasoline. And many are just simply worried about staying safe after just continued aftershocks, even just as early as this morning.
When AmeriCares gets on the ground in a situation like this that's so hectic and so intense, how do you evaluate what's needed? Where do you even begin?
We've been doing this for a long time, and really what is important is listening to the needs and coordinating with other response agencies and local officials. And so one of the things that AmeriCares looks for is meeting the immediate health needs. And so one of the ways that we can look at that is making sure that health workers have the medicines and medical supplies that they need, making sure that they're able to operate. If needed, AmeriCares is prepared to send medical professionals and rehabilitate health facilities, but really looking at, for the many displaced, what are the basic things that they need? Many are forced to leave their homes quickly, and basic hygiene items are what families really need in these emergency shelters.
We've seen, and sadly, we're becoming more accustomed to these major natural disasters. You were previously in Indonesia providing assistance for another earthquake in August. We've seen stories even here in the United States of hurricane victims. We've been watching Post Maria in Puerto Rico. And I think what all these stories are showing us is that there are real challenges in not just getting aid, but distributing it and accessing the folks that need it. What are you seeing on the ground now?
That's right, Tanzina. For people affected, aid is just never fast enough. And especially in places where airports are closed and roads are blocked and fuel is in limited supply. And it's really not unheard of for the first wave of aid to take a few days. But again, we've been doing this for a long time and we're prepared to go to great extents. So similar to our responses in Nepal after the earthquake or in Philippines or recently, as you mentioned, in Puerto Rico, we'll do whatever it takes to get the aid there. We've chartered planes, we've used boats, we've operated our own warehouses and ground logistics. And really, we do whatever we can to get the right aid to the right people at the right time and really focused on health.
And when we think about things like this, I recall it, when we're thinking about Puerto Rico and Hurricane Maria, there were some logistical challenges in getting the aid to the folks who needed it on the island, partly because of some obscure laws that prevented things from being moved in a timely manner. Are there any legal issues that you all are looking at when it comes to transporting medicine and health resources to other countries, particularly right now with Indonesia?
Every country has different requirements for aid, and we have a team of experts that understand the complexities of what to send and how to send it. And so, similar to what we did after the Lombok earthquake, we're working and coordinating with government officials, understanding what we can do to reopen health facilities and get aid to those who need it.
Are you hearing from Indonesians in the United States who are trying to either locate loved ones or send aid?
The best way that people can support right now is to make financial contributions to trusted aid organizations. The organizations that are on the ground doing the work and are closest to it know best what's needed, and the situation continues to change rapidly. And so trusting those organizations to deliver aid in the moment is really what is best.
Kate Duchino is the Vice President of Emergency Response for AmeriCares. Kate, thanks so much for being with The Takeaway.
Thank you.